Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Speak for Yourself podcast featuring the best of Colin Cowherd and Jason Whitlock. I'm your host, Jason McIntyre. Ready for Speak for Yourself? Cowherd and Whitlock, take it away.
We're joined now by Fox NBA analyst Chris Broussard. Let's move to the NBA, where there's growing speculation that LeBron's second run with the Cavs might be coming to an end. According to Woj, people around the league think LeBron could crush Cleveland's spirit once again, this time by moving west and joining either the Lakers or the Clip Show once his contract is up at the end of the year. All right, Whitlock, what do you think's more likely? Cleveland staying, L.A. leaving?
First, I want to say Woj is Adrian Wojnarowski of Yahoo. He's reporting this. He's saying the word is L.A.'s in play, both Lakers and Clippers. I think it's more likely LeBron ends up out here where the money is, where his second home is, where the good weather is.
See, I think it's one of these classic sounds great until there's closer inspection, like moving to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Ooh, paradise. And then you're like, dude, I'm a five-hour flight just to L.A. 12 to get back to New York. It sounds great. Then it's $5 gas and $3 loaves of bread. I think L.A. sounds great, but the Clippers are below his brand. And the Lakers have a roster full of meh. And I just don't think, listen, Kyrie Irving is unbelievable. One of the great players in the league. You're going to abandon that for Brandon Ingram?
You think the league is going to allow the Lakers to continue to stink forever?
They've allowed the Knicks
to stink for 20 years.
The Knicks have never been what the Lakers are.
Years and years and years ago, the Knicks were a flagship franchise.
They froze an envelope trying to fix the Knicks.
I don't want to hit the NBA has allowed small markets to dominate the last 10 years.
Exactly. They're not
Oklahoma
City.
This is a free fluid market.
What do you think?
I think you never say never with LeBron, but I think he's far more likely to stay in Cleveland. Look, wasn't LaMarcus Aldridge going to the Lakers? Wasn't Carmelo Anthony going to the
Dwight
Lakers?
Dwight Howard left.
And everyone around the league was saying Westbrook was going to the Lakers. So this is just people talking that aren't close to LeBron, that don't know what he's thinking. He went back to Cleveland for many reasons, not just basketball. You know, he's doing a lot. And look, not being in L.A. has not stopped him from having a media company that Maverick Carter runs, from being movies. In movies, from having a game show. LeBron knows, and I also think he has designs on owning the Cavaliers down the road. So he could obviously do that if he left, but I think he stays.
But what kind of legacy does he want to leave, though? I mean, in regards to, he wants to win multiple championships.
Right.
And after this year, the Lakers won't be in a position to put him in that mind frame that they can win, no matter what they do. I can understand that Jerry West going to the Clippers now, you know, you want to bend his ear. You want to listen to Jerry West.
No question.
I understand that. But just knowing LeBron and what he wants to accomplish post his basketball career, how he wants to be remembered. He took the hit by leaving before. Does that mean he won't leave again? I'm not for sure. But the ownership aspect, the control of the Cavs post his career, I really think is in the forefront of his mind while he's playing.
By the way, short contracts in Cleveland don't mean he's leaving. What they allow him is leverage with Dan Gilbert. And I think if Dan keeps, and he will, keeps allowing LeBron to get what he wants, he'll stay in Cleveland. Cleveland's a good spot for him. It really is. It's a good spot. He's playing with his friends.
But at what point does it hit that line of demarcation, so to speak? Because Father Time is going to catch up.
Yeah.
So the organization, no matter what leverage LeBron has to make a decision at some point in his career.
Do we keep spending
the money? Do we move on? See, that's also a decision that's going to have to be made down the road.
And do we continue to overlook the mistakes that he's made? If I'm the organization, I would rather have Andrew Wiggins than Kevin Love. And I think in those 3 years, if they had kept Andrew Wiggins, they'd have one title and they'd be better positioned going forward if they had had Andrew Wiggins. So again, if I'm Dan Gilbert, LeBron's got leverage, but I've got, hey man, we've done things your way. And I've spent a lot of money over the tax.
Here's the thing, too. If LeBron, he's not going to catch Jordan, I don't think, with the six rings. Mm-hmm. And if you go to the West, you may never get to the finals again. Is it better to go to 10 or 11 finals, you know, which he could do? Even though you won't win six, you could at least, the legacy would be, man, he got there every year.
Right.
You
got
know?
His butt kicked by Golden State. Five years in a row.
I'm going real fast. Better team.
Real quick to your Wiggins. The only issue I have with that is his development would have been stymied in Cleveland.
Yes.
Because of the ball handling and ball control of LeBron and Kyrie, Wiggins would not be allowed to be the Wiggins we see in Minnesota. He was able to go in there as a young rookie, make his mistakes, learn, be in situations to win. At Cleveland, and he wouldn't have been like that.
And for the record, LeBron has never shown an affinity for playing with undeveloped young people. So when you say
that's not a problem.
Well, no, I mean, he likes playing with veteran, all-star level, proven, high basketball IQ, know the league. He's not a mentor. He's
that
really
sounds like
not
a problem.
It's not a problem. He wants to play with all-stars. Lakers don't have one. Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, he's not interested in playing with that. He didn't want to play with Wiggins.
If he leaves Cleveland, if, which I think is a big if, there are a lot of better places to go than the Lakers. The Clippers, like you said, Jerry West makes it. Miami would make more sense. How about San Antonio? He loves Popovich. You know he put you in a position to win. I just think those are better options than the Lakers.
All right, welcome back. Doug Gottlieb and Jim Jackson are back with us. Let's move to the fight everyone's talking about. Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor, which is now officially set for August 26th in Las Vegas. Just about everyone thinks Floyd is going to take Conor apart. But Dana White went on The Herd today and said we shouldn't count out his guy.
When Conor McGregor hits people, they react to it immediately. They start wobbling or they go down. He hits hard. And the question in this whole thing is, in 12 rounds, can Conor McGregor hit Floyd Mayweather? I don't know what's going to happen when these two guys get in there and start punching. I don't know. Nobody knows. So this fight could be horrible, or it could be one of the craziest things you've ever seen in your life. That's what makes it intriguing.
All right, Cal Herd. Dana can defend Conor all he wants, but Floyd is a massive favorite for a reason. Does he need to knock out Conor to justify this super fight?
No, because I think everybody gets what it is. It is a payday. It's a payday for Dana, McGregor. I mean, listen, Conor McGregor was willing to give up all his advantages. So he's saying, basically, I can't do anything that would give me a fighter's chance. So I'm okay with Conor going down early or being dominated. And I think there's transparency here. This is Evel Knievel jumping his motorcycle from that camera to that one with no chance to crash. There's no chance for Mayweather to lose. We know Conor similarly is doing it for a paycheck, because this is like Steph Curry and LeBron having a basketball event and Steph Curry saying, okay, I'll do it, and I won't even shoot jumpers. If you give me $150 million, I'll be humiliated. That's what it feels like to me. Like, everybody's acknowledged what it is.
I don't have a response to that, really, because I think
that was a good one. Has there ever been a better businessman, a smarter businessman than Floyd Mayweather in the world of sports? I mean, think about it. He waited out Manny Pacquiao until Pacquiao was past his prime, right? And he, you know, he ducked and dodged not just Pacquiao and everybody he's fought, but anybody who was capable of taking him down, and now he takes in a guy out of his normal discipline. I mean, the guy is an absolute genius. And as much as I hate it, I'm going to watch it. I'm fascinated to see it. But like, look, it's they call it the sweet science for reason. He's a scientist, whereas, quite honestly, Conor McGregor is not. He's an amateur. I mean, like, Dana can say what he wants about when he hits people. Different size gloves. Oh, yeah. And yes, MMA fighters might have tougher jaws, might be tougher physically and mentally because of Brazilian jiu-jitsu and just hardcore wrestling.
Right.
But it's different when it's boxing. You're dealing with the best pound-for-pound boxer in his chosen discipline. I don't see how this is competitive.
Well, especially if you go on 12 rounds. And from a boxing perspective, Floyd doesn't have the power like that. We talked about the Victor Cruz, but you really got to go back to Ricky Hatton in 2007 when he had a legitimate knockout. But what Floyd is going to do is frustrate you. My thing is, does Connor come into the fight and muck it up and make it real uncomfortable for Floyd to really get in there? Because we know that Connor is not your typical boxer. So he's going to do something different inside the ring to try to frustrate who's a professional, Floyd. That's the only way you're going to be able to get to him. Think about it. The only person that has something to lose here is Floyd. That's it. Conor McGregor has nothing to lose. He can go back to MMA when this thing is done. If Floyd doesn't look good, if he gets punched, if something happens, it's back on Floyd. It's nothing to do with Conor McGregor as far as tarnishing his image.
I'm going to throw just a slight curveball, and I apologize up front for doing this, Colin, but could we even have this fight if both fighters were black? I mean, honestly, because that seems to be the hook here, because no one rationally thinks this is going to be competitive. To me, the only hook here is what boxing was doing 120 years ago and all the way through the history of boxing is the black-white narrative. I don't see any other hook here because it's not going to be much of a fight.
It's the Great White Hype, part two. I mean, it was a funny movie where you had the Irishman. They made him into this Irish star who had famously knocked out the champ in amateurs. And that's what this... Yeah, the playing off the black and the white, I think, is... And, I mean, the Conor McGregor story is kind of amazing, right? Darren Revelle tweeted out that 4 years ago he was collecting welfare, and now he's going to make $100 million.
The winner of this is UFC. For a boxing match to be interesting, they had to go to their rival. This is like the AFL-NFL merger.
Well, you think this is a good look for the UFC?
I think Joe Namath was a lot more interesting than the NFL quarterbacks. I think Conor's a lot more interesting than all the boxers. And boxing went, okay, this is the best.
This is boxing or is this Floyd saying, Floyd to me is saying, look, the American public is a bunch of suckers.
Yep.
And I can make $300 million for virtually no work because the public is so desperate for any type of boxing match that they will accept this farce.
Well, I think America, again, when George Clooney did Batman, he didn't apologize. We all understood. He wanted to get his movies made. I'll be Batman. Steve Buscemi, Armageddon, says later, I just wanted a bigger house. Everybody in this room has done something, a speech, a camp, for a dollar. Now make it $100 million. I think we all know going in what it is.
George Clooney almost ruined the Batman franchise. Thankfully, Christopher Nolan saved it, okay? But look, I think it's not just black-white. At its core, here's why I think the American public like The Irishman, and it's very simple. We like the idea when you get in the schoolyard fight of, hey, because everybody used to fight at Jordan Elementary at the ditch. Okay, but if you fought a kid at another school, you're going to come to my school and fight. You know, I'll go to your school. I'll fight with your rules. It doesn't really matter. And that's really the UFC mantra. That's really Conor McGregor's mantra. I mean, when he lost, he's lost out of weight class, you know, because his opponent wasn't ready. I mean, so like, here's a guy who, what he's going to say is, I will fight anybody, anywhere, any rules. I'm the ultimate warrior. We know he's going to get destroyed, but I agree with you, Jason. He loses nothing, but this is just Floyd, who might have something to lose, but the truth is he's played us all. He's done it before. He'll probably do it again. He'll probably somehow get Pacquiao to fight him again and get a couple more $100 million.
Isn't it all entertainment? Isn't that what we're looking at here? In mid-August, nothing is going on. Here's the entertainment aspect of it. Two guys at the pre-fight hype, all the press conferences, the tours to get it done, are going to be off the charts. They're going to be talking so much stuff that it's going to make you want to do something in August, which is watch the fight. And at the end of it,
listen, come on. Nobody's getting robbed individually. People are like, oh, they'll make $100 million. There's 308 million people in America. You all chip in a nickel. Like, nobody's getting robbed here. Gottlieb gets it. I call him, dude, can I come over? Yeah, seven guys in a room. We all pay $9.
Here's the other part.
It's entertaining.
Here's the other part about how they get it, and Colin has said this for years, and baseball does not. You notice they put it in August. They're not putting it up against the NFL. Oh, no way. They're putting it before the NFL, kind of salivates us for the NFL season, as opposed to baseball, who's stuck with it. We're going to do October. And look, the Cubs were obviously great last year, and people watched. But if they really wanted to cash in, they would have their playoffs in August as well.
Guaranteed. This will be my prediction. Floyd will embarrass him, and part two, they'll change the rules and make it more MMA style, and we'll all do it again.
And I'd watch both. Welcome back. Joined now by two Super Bowl champs, Seth Joyner, Eric Davis. Let's talk NFL, Seahawks. ESPN recently reported there's a growing rift between Seattle's defense and the quarterback Russell Wilson. But defensive end Michael Bennett stood behind his quarterback yesterday saying, quote, "We can't win a game without him." And Bennett wasn't the only member of the Legion of Boom to stand up for Russell Wilson.
We're teammates. You know, it's like a family. It's like everybody else in the family. We fight for one another. Just like I'm fighting for the other 52 guys out there, I'm fighting for him, and he's fighting for us. And we have a great appreciation for how tough our quarterback is and what he's played through. You know, last year he played through a number of injuries, and he's not doing that because, oh, man, I just got to go out there and it's a job. But he's doing that for the guys next to him, and we appreciate that. And, you know, we think he's a great quarterback.
All right, Whitlock, you buying there's no rift between Russell and his teammates?
A lot of smoke, man. A lot of smoke around a team that wasn't in the Super Bowl last year. I don't think it was in the Super Bowl the year before. It's just talk, 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 talk. They're in the news more than the Patriots, more than the Atlanta Falcons, yeah, more than anybody. You know, they protest a little too much. Yeah, there's a rift here.
Tom Brady, 15 years, never hear of a rift. Peyton Manning all those years, once he barked at a kicker. This is the drip, drip, drip theory I have. One of the reasons I was out on Johnny Manziel. It started with a parking ticket. Remember, that was the first story. Johnny Manziel parking ticket. Got all feisty, College Station. And there was that picture thing. And then there was the money sign in college. Then he barked with a coach. Drip, drip, drip. Pretty soon there's the faucet bursts. Like, there's no way you can keep giving me these stories. Dude's been in the league 5 years, Russell Wilson. It's about the fourth time I've heard this story. Some of it's got to be true, right? Something?
No, I don't think so. Because
none of it.
No, I don't think so. Do I think that these guys are hard on one another? Yes. Do I think that we were hard on one another as teammates when I played? Yes. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I would yell at Jerry Rice and Steve Young and all those
never
guys.
Never made the magazines.
Well, because we didn't have social media. All this stuff is not new. Good teams that compete at a high level, guys have like those rifts.
Okay, how come Cam doesn't? Cam's not half the quarterback Russell.
Wait, because – hold on.
Everybody loves Cam.
No,
on his team?
Wait, hold on. But you keep – just because somebody writes it doesn't make it true. When you ask the guys face-to-face, that's what I keep telling you guys. When you ask them and you talk to them, why is it Sherman can say there's not a problem, but someone can write it for ESPN and then there's a problem?
Because it's always the same team. But why is it always Seattle and Russell Wilson?
But why is it the guys just can't say – we don't have an issue with one another, we're cool, and you accept that.
My wife can keep saying she's not having an affair. She shows up for the sixth night at 2 a.m, something's going on.
Well, that's a conversation that you and your wife are going to have, and you'll find out and get some truth.
Listen,
okay?
They can say all that they want, that there's no issue. There's an issue. And this is the problem when you have a defense-centric team. When they're the dominant part of the team, and the offense isn't towing their row, it becomes problematic. I've been there, seen it, lived it in Philadelphia. We had this great defense. The offense was our Achilles heel, and there was always tension. Now, of course, Richard Sherman is going to say this. He's got to say this because you cannot go into a season with this dissension out there. And the big thing is someone leaked that there's a problem. Okay, someone's leaked that there's some dissension. So now they're trying to clean it up because the locker room cry is, hey, we're family. We keep our business in-house. We don't let it outside for the media. But somebody leaked out that there's a problem.
Okay, but this is the thing. You're saying just because it's a defensive-centric team, that because you want the other side of the ball to carry their weight, then there has to be an issue. And see, I completely disagree with that because I'm telling you, I lived it. I lived on a team where when that 49ers offense was rolling, we were good on defense. Mm-hmm. So it didn't matter. It didn't matter if you weren't doing your job because the standard was so high, period. And that's what I'm saying everyone's missing with the Seattle Seahawks. The standard that those players that have grown up and they have set, it's so high that they put a lot of pressure on each other all the time.
Guys,
doesn't mean that they don't like each other.
You guys never lost a Super Bowl because the offense threw an interception
at the 1 yard line,
14 inches from victory.
See, this is why you defensive guys are trouble. See, ever notice this? When a team is great offensively and bad defensively, there's no discord because the offensive size guys are still getting publicity and rich and everybody's happy, right? The stars of the team. But if defensive guys are dominating offense, you're losing games and the star players aren't getting paid either. And so it creates discord. I only hear this kind of discord when it's a defensive-dominated team. There's a lot of offensive.
But I think also what we're ignoring is Richard Sherman is a unique personality.
Yeah.
Okay.
There haven't been a lot of Richard Shermans, just personality-wise, in the league. Deion Sanders is completely different than Richard Sherman. So that's not a comparison. Richard Sherman thinks of himself as this great intellectual from Stanford, and everything that falls out of his mouth is golden and better than anybody that went to UTEP, Ball State, or Jackson State, or wherever.
Richard, that'd be Jacksonville State, but that's
Jacksonville right. State.
Get it
Richard
right.
Sherman thinks of himself as the Ivy League cornerback who's, everything that he says is golden. Then you got Michael Bennett added onto that. Every day, Michael Bennett is in the news. He can't quit talking about Colin Kaepernick. These guys love publicity, period. They think of themselves as having these great things to say, and they're so much smarter than everybody else, and let me show you. And it's a nightmare because you know who actually is the smartest player on that team? The freaking quarterback, Russell Wilson. And they're trying to be smarter than him, better than him, and show
why,
him up.
Why? Because they're saying that they expect him to do a certain job. Well, you know
their
what? When Ray Lewis
dictated.
When Ray Lewis and Ed Reed would speak out about Joe Flacco and that offense performing better, no one said that they were presenting themselves as being smarter or anything like that. There's a standard set, and they were saying, "Do your job."
Okay, but their criticism against Joe Flacco is legitimate. Russell Wilson is the second highest rated passer rating in league history. One's Aaron, three's Brady. They had 14 blowout losses in Pete's first 2 years. Since Russell arrived, 2-5 years.
But Colin, can I ask you something? What's his criticism? Michael Bennett just said, I think he's a top five quarterback and we can't win without him.
He
just said that.
And you just compared Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman to Ray Lewis and Ed Reed.
No, I'm saying.
And there is no comparison. You talking about Ray Lewis and Ed Reed, arguably the best at their positions.
And by the way,
ever.
Russell Wilson is significantly better than Joe Flacco.
Yeah, but this narrative that the quarterback is smarter than anybody else on the field.
On that team, he's smarter than these guys.
Jason, listen, you don't play defensive football anymore, and the day of the big dumb football player is gone. Okay,
I'm just saying.
Aren't thinkers on that side?
When I line up, if I took you through my thought process pre-snap, it would blow your mind. You want to know why? Because a team comes out in a formation. We have a defense or a blitz set. They shift, it changes. They motion, it changes. We could be in 3-4 different defenses before they snap the ball one time. They're usually, they know where they're going, they're usually faster than us, and they know what the play is, and we're read and react. So if you can't think on the fly.
They're a little defensive. Only one guy here played quarterback.
Defensive.
Now it was high school, but it was me. I can sense the defensive.
I played quarterback in high school as well.
An amazing first round of the U.S. Open so far, where it was a tale of two golfers, with defending champion Dustin Johnson struggling through his first round, finishing at 3 over. Meanwhile, Ricky Fowler, who currently holds the title best player to never win a major, was unstoppable, finishing his round at 7 under, which ties the record set by Jack Nicklaus and Thomas Weisskopf in 1980 for the lowest first round score to par in U.S. Open history. By the way, Jack went on to win that year. Colin, what's a bigger headline today, Dustin struggles or Ricky's record-tying round?
I think Dustin Johnson struggles. Golf purists and sports purists often struggle with a very true part of sports. Some teams and people are just simply more interesting. Michigan losing under Brady Hoke was more interesting than Western Michigan winning under this young P.J. Fleck, all right?
Yep.
Remember when LeBron lost to the Mavs? The story wasn't the Mavs. The story was LeBron losing to the Mavs. And I think Dustin Johnson he's a camera crew away from a reality show. He's interesting. He's got baggage. He hits it a mile. He looks like he could be in several sports. I think he jumps off the television screen, and I know golf purists don't want to hear this, but he gets me on a Sunday to a television set, and I'm a casual golf guy.
Because he's a train wreck, and that's what he was today, a train wreck. I mean, again, he can go either direction. Ricky Fowler is Russell Westbrook, Colin. You want to speak analogy? He's flamboyant with his dress and everything. Listen, I think Ricky Fowler shooting 7 under, tying Nicklaus and Weisskopf first round. That's the story to me because, one, there's 40 guys under par on this course
right
now.
If you were at that event, what would you write about?
I would write about, hey, I think this course is a little bit too easy.
Then I'd read the other columnist who wrote about Dustin.
The first thing is that normally whoever leads after day one in a major is usually like the first guy you see in a horror flick, right? He's not going to make it to the end of the show. On the other hand, I disagree with you, Colin. I'm lockstep with Jason. This is Ricky Fowler. He's got all kinds of game. He's got all kinds of swag. His girlfriend's the most famous pole vaulter in the history of the United States. And I don't even know if she's any good at being a pole vaulter because she's so yes, is exactly who you're thinking of. And she's walking the course with him. He's good looking. He's flamboyant. And he's got all the game in the world. He's never put it together for four rounds at a major. He did win the Players going back about a year and a half ago, which is, you know, the fifth major, if you will. I think Ricky's the story. Plus, it's the record score. And I talked about this on your radio show when you were drinking Mai Tais with your kids yesterday. The USGA is smart. They set up this course for scoring. They watch basketball. They change the rules for scoring. Football, change the rules for scoring. Nobody wants to see what they've had six of the past 12 years where over par wins. We don't want to see golf just kick the hell out of these guys the first couple days. Under par, and we'll see if Ricky can hold on. That's the story.
Well, I like Ricky, but I'm going to go back to your point about intriguing. The Masters this year with Sergio, the ratings were down, okay? Even though Sergio won, it was the first time, but the Master ratings were down. When I look at the U.S. Open, I'm thinking difficulty, and that's what they want. Yeah. Even though they cut down the fescue this year, but think about this course. You're talking about five par fours over 500 yards, four par fives that can stretch to 600. So U.S. Opens are difficult. So if you're Dustin Johnson today in the first round and you're spraying it in the fescue, it's hard to get out of and score. But from Ricky's perspective, think about it. It rained. It's going to take some distance off of your drive, but you can seek the pin now in your second, third shot. So now you're able to score lower. So for Ricky's perspective on day one, it's a bigger story. Now, if Ricky's there on Sunday, does it draw in the crowd and get the ratings if Dustin is not there? That might be a different story compared to today.
Listen, Rory McIlroy, post-Tiger's dominance, didn't move the needle. Now, I was fascinated by him, but it's very interesting. If I said the most popular golfers, not the best, the most eyeballs, most fascinating last 10 years, Tiger won. You could make an argument John Daly was two. Just as far as John Daly leads a major, rushes to a TV set. Dustin's got a little bit of that in there. He's as talented at times as Tiger for a weekend. There's a little meltdown quality to him. Who golfers like isn't necessarily who Main Street likes. Golfers understand how hard their sport is. They really appreciate great. Sometimes the rest of us appreciate a meltdown.
I think you're underselling Ricky Fowler. Yeah. And Ricky Fowler, how much mainstream fans actually know him. He used to be the guy that would dress up in Oklahoma State Orange every Sunday. Now he's the guy with the game that we're waiting to find. Like, we just saw Kevin Durant win his first NBA title. When is Ricky going to finally win a major? I think you're underselling his importance.
All right, to another guy moving to Southern California, Jerry West, who is headed back to L.A. after a very successful stint consulting for the Warriors. But the former Laker won't be coming back to the team he played for and guided for many years as a general manager. Instead, West is taking a consulting job with the L.A. Clippers, who have played second fiddle in L.A. forever. Cowherd, can West help the Clippers get out of the Lakers' shadow?
No. Do you remember when Nick Saban was at Michigan State? Did they overtape Michigan?
No.
No. Remember when the Mets in the was it the
strawberry
Miracle Mets
and
even the Strawberry, Daryl Strawberry Mets? Yeah, for an hour. And then the Yankees are good again. Listen, we know this to be true. There are some teams in this country that'll always be two. Mm-hmm. Joe Namath played for the Jets. The Giants are still the team. Right now, the Mets have been interesting for 4 or 5 years. The minute the Yankees get an interesting young player, they zoom past the Mets.
Okay, but hold on, Colin. The question is, out of the Lakers' shadow, shadows go away when the sun comes up again. And so, for a moment, can Jerry West, for a 2 or 3 or 4 year stretch, get them out of the shadow? Can he get LeBron James on the phone and just consider the Clippers? Jerry West, I would rather be the Clippers with Jerry West than the Lakers with Magic Johnson.
So would I, but that doesn't mean they'll be more relevant in L.A., but I agree with you.
For an hour, like you said, they've already eclipsed the Lakers for the last 4 or 5 years.
Easily.
You know, so they're never going to overtake them. I was in New York when the Nets went to the finals 2 straight years with Jason Kidd.
That was terrible.
Phenomenal team. Exciting, fun to watch. But the Knicks weren't even that good, but everybody cared more about the Knicks. If that Nets team had been the Knicks, it would have been bigger than the Patrick Ewing era because they were fun to watch. But they'll never overtake them, but this is a phenomenal move for the Clippers. If I could have Jerry West or Magic Johnson running my franchise, I'd much rather Jerry West.
Hey, Jerry West, from the fact that you want to be able to get to the finals. You're never going to overtake the Lakers. I don't care what you do, how many finals you win. But if I'm Ballmer, what I want to do is be able to stack my trophy case up with relevant titles. And no matter what you do, it's like the White Sox. No matter what you do, you win, it's still Cubs. It's still Cubs. I don't care what's going on. It's going to be like that with the Lakers. But with Jerry West there, it does give you, I think, more of a relevance, more something to stand on if you're a Ballmer and say, listen, we really do got a chance to compete and win for a title. Now, what moves they make with Chris Paul and everything, that's yet to be seen.
Listen, I think for people thinking about an arena in Inglewood, Jerry West adds to the credibility and viability, yes, of the organization. And so, again, all I'm talking about is getting them out of the shadow. Now, the Suns going to come back up again, and the Lakers are going to be dominant, blah, blah. But could they extend, again, you've already talked for the last 4 or 5 years, if you get Jerry West in here and he puts together a championship-caliber team, yeah, they'll be out of the Lakers' shadow for a time. And if they get a new arena in Inglewood, you just never know.
Two things. How do we know Jerry West isn't here to help get the stadium deal done? He adds legitimacy. Yeah. You walk into the banks with Jerry West. My second takeaway is Doc Rivers is going to be in some trouble. I don't know if this is good for Rivers.
Honestly, I would have rather I think they should have hired Jerry West as president. And then if you want to make Doc just the coach, I think Doc would succumb to Jerry West.
Can they move him in that role? Jerry West, bring him in now at this particular role. Let another year kind of go by.
Yeah, you're right.
Make some moves and see.
If they struggle one more year next year, yeah, that probably happens. That's a good point.
You're a newspaper guy. It's always a New York Times town, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah. You're a... I mean,
I'm a Wall Street Journalist.
It's a fine newspaper.
Yeah, I can tell.
This is the Speak for Yourself podcast featuring the best of Colin Cowherd and Jason Whitlock. I'm your host, Jason McIntyre. We're actually dark tomorrow. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, YouTube. We're all over the place, folks. See you Monday.